Jonathan.
What's that?
Jonathan Furman also you mentioned. Jonathan Furman.
Yes. There, with Chanika, it is mentioning Chanika as the Brahmana. I don't think his name is mentioned in the Sanskrit, but he's sort of referred to as the Brahmana. The Chandragupta is mentioned, and it's well known that this is a very unique circumstance because King Nanda and his sons, they were not very popular. They were considered not very good rulers, not very pious, and they also had difficulty in maintaining India as a united nation. During their reign, India was sort of broken up to some degree, and foreign rulers were able to exert quite a powerful influence and cause a lot of trouble in India. So they weren't, they had power, but a lot of trouble happened in India during their reign. In fact, it was during this time that Alexander the Great came and attacked India and managed to defeat many different provinces of India. It's interesting, Alexander the Great, of course, because he was marching across the Middle East and different places where he went, and he was just destroying all the armies very easily. People began to say that he was God, and he began to believe that he was God. It was actually just before he entered India, really, that he started to become convinced that he was God. And of course, that was the beginning of his downfall. You know, that India is the home of God. So, Alexander the Great. There are some rulers who were very, very, in these previous years, who were very, very powerful and notoriously violent and strict. I think Genghis Khan was one. I believe it was he who said that you must all be sinful, otherwise why would God send me to punish you all? many of these personalities, of course, the king is the representative of God, and we see here, therefore in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it takes the time to mention the kings, even simple ones, because they are quite significant. They do represent God directly when they're ruling the kingdom according to the laws of the Supreme Lord, or they represent God indirectly as a way of a means of punishing sinful people en masse. And we see that Sanatana Goswami, when he was in Java, it's not unusual to find devotees in jail, because sometimes different rulers become antagonistic against devotees for different reasons. In the case of Sanatana Goswami, he wanted to simply join Lord Chaitanya's movement, and therefore he didn't want to perform his different duties for the king, who was a Muslim ruler at that time, and for that he was thrown in jail as a rascal. But when he was speaking with the Muslim ruler, he acknowledged that, you know, you are the representative of God, so, you know, I'm not going to perform these services anymore. So as a representative of God, I accept what you will do to me. In other words, Sanatana Goswami, of course, he understood that because he was a devotee, very much devoted to God, he understood that if you're the representative of God, then in essence, no real harm will come to me. So, whatever you do, that is okay. Because you're the representative of God. So he was thrown in jail, because ultimately he was released by, he bribed the jailkeeper, and you know, with diplomatic words, diplomacy, a little bit of chicanery, a little bit of trickery, he managed to get himself out of jail. The king is actually represents the Lord. And of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says that you know, anything which is where we see some extraordinary power or potency or opulence, we must take it that that is representing the Supreme Lord. And therefore, you know, within our society, we also generally offer respect to those who are, in essence, like powerful administrators. At the same time, just as the king is a representative of the Lord, we also understand the Brahmins and Vaishnavas and are also representative of the Lord. So we see that in our movement, people are treated as senior or respectable according to various different classifications. So it's not that if one has been awarded by Krishna some extraordinary ability to perform administrative tasks within ISKCON, that that is the only criteria of advancement. We also offer respect when we see, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if someone is particularly attached to the holy name and is able to, you know, very ecstatically enthuse others to chant the holy name because of their, you know, great love and faith in the holy name, that is also another reason why we offer, you know, respect as someone who is very senior. Age has something, but it's not particularly significant. It is definitely it is one of the factors that we should consider, especially, you know, if you have circumstances where devotees may be equally attached to the holy name of the Lord and may have been serving Srila Prabhupada's movement for about the same amount of years, so there may be some equal, but if one is senior, the person should be offered some, you know, more respect because of the, even by age, you know, so that is there. But again, it's not the only factor. And then we also offer respect to devotees according to their realization that, as we see, this is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the certain devotees empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to understand and broadcast the actual philosophy of Krishna consciousness. also offer respect as someone as being a senior Vaishnava according to the level of their faith. That some Vaishnavas, their faith is so unbreakable, cannot waver even a fraction, even, you know, in the face of death or torture or, you know, different things that will not budge an inch from the Krishna consciousness. Whereas you see that some devotees, that if there's the slightest little trouble, oh, you know, I don't know if I can believe, you know, Krishna's God, why, you know, why didn't we get, you know, a Prakorva this morning? You know, it's like, this is too much, I don't know if I can go on. So, according to, and of course, some devotees, you know, may have particular talents, extraordinary talents in particular fields of Krishna consciousness. So, and some devotees are very much, you know, senior in one of these categories, and some devotees become senior because they possess, you know, many of these different categories to a higher level of degree. We also, you know, we offer respects also to someone as being senior according to the fact as whether they are sannyas. You know, sannyas, of course, is very, very difficult to maintain in Kali Yuga, and we have seen even in our society that many very determined and you know, wonderful devotees of high caliber have not been able to maintain sannyas. So, you know, if someone is able to maintain sannyas, to be so dedicated to the Lord, it does signify, you know, seniority. At the same time, it does not mean that just because one is wearing saffron that they're necessarily more respectful or more senior than someone who is a grihastha or a vanaprastha or sometimes a brahmachari. Because again, these are the categories as to one's faith in the holy name, one's realization, one's faith, actually one's realization of the philosophy of Krishna, and one's faith in the holy name. These different categories can actually make a devotee who is, in the grihastha ashram more elevated than someone who's in the saffron. As you see, there are many, many different categories of who we should offer respect to, even within our society, as a senior devotee. And therefore it can become very, sometimes very difficult to understand. If we should, the point being there, of course, is that if we make just one category, that every time I see someone who's older than another devotee, that devotee is automatically the senior devotee. Or, sometimes devotees make this mistake, that this devotee has been in the movement for 32 years, and this devotee has been in the movement for 32 years and 6 months, so he is more senior. You know, so, especially, you know, when devotees have only been around a few years, sometimes there's always this struggle for who's going to take the senior sort of role within the ashram or within the temple, like that. But when you can, you know, when you consider devotees may have only been around for 6 months or a year, and they're sort of struggling to, there's not really much in it, you know, sometimes. And these things tend to become more self-evident over many, many years. We see that Krishna has a way of, as they say, separating men from the mice. So, in this way, you know, being a king is one of the criteria by which one is considered to be a representative of God. But the point being that there are many other criteria, but they should not be totally negated, and at the same time we do not take it as the all in all, oh, he's the king, he represents God. Whatever he says is, so in this particular case, Chanaka Pandit, he was a Brahmin, and there are different stories how he came across Chandragupta. The Chandragupta wasn't a king, he wasn't a Kshatriya. One story is that he was in a, he was the son of a cowherd person, and that when Chanaka saw the qualities of Chandragupta, he understood that this person has the, if trained, he has the ability to rule as a great king of India, to rule the whole of India, if he would be trained. So you just see the vision of Chanaka Pandit. And of course, that in itself is very, very instructive, as we were saying, that one must look very, very carefully beyond the externals in order to see the qualities of the person. Actually, one of the sayings of the Chanaka Pandit is that you can accept gold even if it is fallen in a filthy place. A wise person, they will see, oh, there's gold there, and some, oh, it's fallen in the mud. And the wise person, oh, I'll take that, thank you. Yeah. Take that and wash it off. It's just nice. It's valuable. It has lost its value. One will accept a wife or a husband, even if that person has taken birth in a low place. We see that sometimes people who are kings and princes and what have you, they sometimes want to marry a person just because they have a status, that's suitable to the royal family or what have you. They have wealth and they've been to some prestigious university like this. And according to those qualifications, they say, yes, this person makes a good husband, a good wife. According to China. And of course, therefore, we see that they're not the quality, they're all very external. But even if someone has taken a very low birth, if they, the qualities are there, then one should accept that person as a suitable partner. Whereas if someone externally has all the trappings, but you look there and see the qualities, what is this, that person should be rejected. It doesn't matter about the wealth this out of the other. So Chanaka Pandit, he trained up Chandragupta, and he actually made him into a very disciplined king. The difference was that Chandragupta followed very strictly the advice coming from Chanaka Pandit. Chanaka Pandit, his philosophy, of course, most of the philosophy of Chanaka Pandit was drawn from the Vedas, although some of it was, a matter of common sense and logic. There are a couple of works ascribed to him. He wrote extensively on, practical or logical application, common sense application of Dharma, religious principles, the essence of it. Artha, economic development, karma, sense gratification, and moksha liberation. And Srila Prabhupada quoted quite often, especially certain verses. There are certain verses that Srila Prabhupada quoted. But Chandragupta followed very strictly what Chanaka Pandit advised. One of the things he advised was that he should have three reliable, at least three reliable advisors, and he should never make any important decision without, you know, consulting the three reliable advisors. Of course, Prabhupada once mentioned that he told him that if you ever go against my advice, I will meet you, which he eventually did. He questioned him, just questioned him once. Telling Pandit himself was he was a bachelor throughout his life, and he had no interest in being a glorious ruler or king, what have you. But he did want to see the glory of India, in its former state, reinstated by a proper king who could actually rule all over the whole of India, which some people did. He managed to unite, for the first time in a long time, all the states of India as to one united India, and that had been broken up for a long, long time. Just to give an example, some of the quotes that Srila Prabhupada would quote from Chandra Pandit. He quotes this one often, that a person is considered to be wise or knowledgeable when they see all other women, apart from their married wife, as mother. They see all others' possessions as no better than garbage on the street, and they treat all other living entities as they would like to be treated themselves. So, Srila Prabhupada, especially this point of seeing all other women as mother, there was one. By saying that I even see my wife as my mother. Prabhupada says, this is ridiculous. And the only reason he did that was because he was actually impotent. In other words, he could not unite with his wife. And so because of his lack of ability to actually unite with his wife, he made out that he was so advanced. But he was basically... it is infinite. But it's completely unfair to see one's wife as mother. Apart from one's wife as mother. Some say that we see women as our sister. Actually, Prabhupada prefer that you see as mother. And Krishna also, was like that. We see in the story of Banasura. Banasura was fighting with Krishna because Krishna's grandson, Aniruddha, had been fell in love with Banasura's daughter, Usha, and Banasura wanted to kill him. Because his daughter wasn't married, he thought, Aniruddha brought shame to the family. So there was this big, big battle. And, everyone who was a big fighter in the universe came. It was, Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva's son, Kartikeya, the god of war. And, Satyaki, the commander in chief of the Yadavas. So in this way, they were fighting, fighting, fighting. One stage, Banasura, he thought, I have to attack Krishna, but he was getting defeated by Krishna. And so there was one goddess who was like a mother figure to Banasura. He worshipped her so nicely, like an expansion of Durga. And in order to save Banasura, she appeared on the battlefield naked. So, when Krishna saw the naked woman, he closed his eyes and looked away. because he wouldn't, you know, oh, the mother, you know, you cannot look at any other woman except his mother, and should not see her naked. So he looked away like this, and Parasura, you know, took off. You know, it was his opportunity to run away from Krishna, otherwise he would be killed. So we see that Srila Prabhupada quoted some statements of Chanakya Pandit very regularly, and not everything, you know, after all, you know, Chanakya Pandit is not recognized as, you know, a stalwart authority on devotional service, and you know, there's enough there that there's a mention in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's obviously a very significant person within history that we should disregard, and should qualify to quote. At the same time, not all of his, you know, you notice, especially with devotees, when they comment on his books and what have you, they might sometimes leave out several sections of verses. I'm not sure if this one is by Bhagavatam, but which they consider not appropriate to the Vaishnavas. There is some debate also as to all the works that were attributed to Chanakya Pandit. Some say that the Kama Sutra was actually attributed to Chanakya Pandit. We see here that his name is mentioned as so the Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti the core both confirm that the Brahman mentioned here is Chanakya, also known as Kautilya or Vatsyayana. So Vatsyayana is actually attributed to writing the Kama Sutra, and some say that Chanakya is Vatsyayana and some say it's not. What we do know of Chanakya is that he was extremely well. You know, he had great knowledge in, you know, just a vast variety of spheres of life. You know, the psychology of men, women, all different orders of life, sex life, everything, you know, was there. It's interesting, you know, as far as the Kama Sutra is concerned, because the Kama Sutra is sort of a guide for people who want to enjoy sex life in various different varieties. In essence, Krishna has compiled his own varieties to 800,000-400,000 different species of life. People who like to enjoy sex life in different varieties, that he has given 800,000-400,000 different species. And in that way, there's an unlimited variety. And of course, people who want to enjoy sex life in the material world quite often find themselves in different species of life. But they will certainly be bound by the cycle of birth and death in this material world. And that's possibly one thing that they didn't mention in the Kama Sutra, which they should have, that, you know, there is so many different varieties of ways to enjoy sex life, but each and every variety will guarantee birth and death in this material world for a long time. You know, that should have been mentioned. So here we see that, you know, if we sum up Chanakya's philosophy in just a few brief statements. His philosophy basically is that one should work very, very diligently and be constantly active. One who is constantly active like that will never suffer from poverty or values. One should be fearless, and of course one can be fearless because one is has knowledge. You know, and one should be very much self-controlled. One must control one's mind and one's senses. And if one does that, only then can one actually always be applying oneself with proper knowledge and always be getting good results. So, you know, his philosophy is something's got to be done in the afternoon, do it this morning. It's got to be done in the evening, do it in the afternoon. It's got to be done tomorrow, do it today. Like this. He wasn't a big... it's not that he was against astrology, but what he didn't like was that people who sit around waiting for a favorable astrological period in order to, and not being active, and therefore not being productive, not really able to get any good results because they're waiting for something that in the future there'll be some favorable astrological period like this, and that comes. So he, which is very, very intelligent, that, and even, you know, as mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam in different degrees, that, you know, I think it's mentioned in relationship to when Kamsa wanted to kill Devaki, and it describes that there's nothing a demon won't do, and there's, you know, nothing that you know, according to the sense verification, there's nothing that the body won't surrender, you know, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But I think in that section there it describes that the devotee, you know, they will execute their duty without waiting for a favorable circumstance. So, it's not that he's against astrology, but the point being that whether circumstances are favorable or unfavorable, you keep actively performing your activities, and you do that with control of mind and the senses. And a person who does that will never have find their life is full of failure or poverty or what have you. Just constantly. And Srila Prabhupada was, you know, it's actually one of the symptoms of an advanced devotee as well. It's one of the nine qualities of Bhava. That a devotee, they never waste even a second. So, you know, it's a similar quality. Here, Chanakya Pandit, of course, is applying it to Dharma, the Karma, and Moksha. And as devotees, we apply it just to one thing, one point of it, never wasting a second, you know, in this human form of life. Always finding so much to do in the service of Krishna, never waiting for some favorable circumstances that are, you know, things are not really happening for me at the present moment. Maybe next week I'll do some studies, you know, or I was thinking of doing this, you know, project for Krishna, you know, and maybe next year. The devotee is sort of one way or another, just always pushing despite how favorable or unfavorable the circumstances are, they understand what should be done in Krishna consciousness, and they don't waste a second, and they don't wait for, you know, favorable one, they just, you know, get stuck into it like that. And you know, Srila Prabhupada wanted that sort of mood. And, you know, that was one of the things he liked about when he, came to the Western world. It was one of the things that he did like about the Western people, the ones that become devotees, was that, you know, if he wanted them to do something, they just did it. There were no excuses that, you know, my son is getting educated and all this and that and the other, or, you know, my job, or, you know, this, you know, like this. So many excuses, which he did get in India in the beginning. You know, the son, later, it's a laser. Yeah. Later I will, come and I will do something. But now, the family and this and that and the other. Of course, that was a beginning. That was, and then we see that Srila Prabhupada, then, in the later course of his, as his movement expanded, that people all over the world, India, Russia, wherever, he found persons who understood his mood. Don't leave Krishna consciousness, to later. You just do it now. No excuses. He once said that Lord Sri Krishna said, the Bhagavad Gita, that you surrender to me and I will protect you from all sinful reactions. And Prabhupada said, an amazing joke that, he wasn't sort of saying that you surrender to me, but only when you've got all these other things you've got to do for many, many lifetimes, and after so many considerations, and when everything's favourable, and when things are right for you, it's just surrender to me now, like that, I will protect you. Don't fear, just immediately take that. So that is, in one sense, that is our Krishna conscious philosophy, but it was the Buddha Chanaka Pandit as well. So even the theory, it has its applications. And within Krishna consciousness, we can take such things as the different statements of Chanaka Pandit, and they can be applied, many of them, in a Krishna conscious way. And in fact, as you go through, you'll see that many of the different things that the rulers are doing these days, like the king who is allows things in the kingdom, if they allow severe crimes to go unpunished, they will become extremely unpopular. Or if they severely punish or harass innocent people, that will become unpopular. Beyond the point of no return. So there are many different maxims of Chanaka Pandit. The majority of them, practically, the majority of his statements, maybe 95% of them, if they're applied today in politics, economics, married life, even devotional service, they will actually produce results. So, he's a very, very significant person in the history of the world. And I quite often read one little verse daily, just as a wisdom results from the worship of elders. So, I'll leave it there. Anyone have any questions at all? No?
Generally, is it recommended to read Chanaka Niti as common devotees, or one has to stick to the verses which are given by Prabhupada, used by Prabhupada?
I have seen books of Chanaka Pandit written by devotees, and what they do is that they especially because Srila Prabhupada quoted him quite often, that they've knowing that devotees would look into it, and they've sort of written books in such a way that his language is more readily understood by devotees. There are some statements, especially if the Chanaka, is written perhaps by persons who are not familiar with Western culture or what have you, or Islam culture, one may get a slight different understanding. So some devotees, the devotees, have written authorized books describing many, not all, but a lot which are applicable to devotional service. So, yes, you can certainly read those. No, I want to speak of Chanakya. Srila Prabhupada, also said that we could read, the philosophy of Sankaracharya. It's not recommended for, unless a devotee, of course, is read all of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and really studied it. Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion, the commentaries by various acharyas. That devotee who has a very solid footing in Krishna consciousness, they may read even books by Sankaracharya in order to be able to understand their arguments, in order to defeat when they come, if that's their sort of field of preaching, which Prabhupada did. For the general devotees, if they actually read even little bits of Sankhya philosophy, they'll fall down. That's the thing. For the general devotees, if they're not fixed up in Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam is God, is Krishna, absolutely fixed. And if they read something by these different personalities, or even materialistic persons, that association will rub off and it will cause them some difficulty in devotional service. We see Krishna shows us how powerful association is even to devotees. We see that when Satyajit had the shining cup of jewel, what happened was Satyajit had defamed Krishna, claiming that, oh, Krishna has taken this jewel from my son. But actually Krishna hadn't. Anyway, when the story came about that Krishna hadn't done it, that a lion had killed Satyajit's son, wanted to give Krishna the Shyamakama jewel, and he gave his daughter Satyavati. So then Krishna went off to Hastinapur, because at that stage he had heard that the Pandavas were all killed in the house of Lake. He knew that they hadn't been, but he went to mourn with the others, not letting on that he knew. While he was away, Akrura, who's a great devotee, Akritavarma, who was a great devotee of the Lord, plotted with others, with Satyadanta, for Satyadanta to take the jewel of Satyajit. And so Satyadanta went in there and butchered him practically while he was sleeping, took the jewel and did. So of course that was Krishna's father. Now different commentators have described why is it that even great devotees like the Guru and Kritavarma become implicated in this activity which was ultimately sinful and distressing to Krishna. Now one, of course, we have to understand that Kritavarma and Akrura, they wanted to get the jewel for Krishna, whereas Satyadanta, because he wanted to marry Satyavarma, but Krishna went to Satyavarma, that he just wanted to get revenge and kill Satyajit and take the jewel. But Akrura was thinking of service to Krishna, but it wasn't very well thought out. So anyway, why did they get involved? One, because Akrura, when he went to Vrindavan and brought Krishna out of Vrindavan to Mathura, the gopis they were very angry with him. And because of, he offended them, perhaps he should have spent a little bit more time with them, and I'm sorry, I have to take him, like this, he basically went and took him. He should have, the senior devotees, the most senior, and there was no discussion, he just went and got Krishna and took him, like that, so some problem. And with Kritavarma, he associated with Kamsa. So because he associated with a very materialistic person, even though he was a devotee, a great devotee, he became implicated. So, there's a saying that one may think, there's some poison in this literature, but I'll read it and I'll just take the good bits and reject the bad bits. That's like saying, I'll drink this mixture of milk and poison and I'll just pee out the poison. Pass water, pass out the poison like this. But it's gone through your body. So one has to be very careful. But you see, the great yogis, they can actually drink mercury, and then they do, they pass water on bell metal and turn it into gold. So, some people can drink poison because they're very powerful and it doesn't affect them, and they can actually produce, something wonderful, and other people just take a little bit of poison and it will kill them. So according to one's potency, Lord Shiva drank the whole ocean. So one has to be very careful the best advice, read all the Srila Prabhupada books until one is fixed up in those books, and then one may look at different other writers that somehow fit in with one's style of preaching, which are important for the type of people that one is mixing with and preaching with, not just out of a sense of education of the mind, but if it has some purpose in your service, then yes, by all means. Any other questions or?